This is Whitley Strieber, and you've reached the edge of the world, dreamland. This week, we're talking about implants, huge breakthrough. I've known for years the one in my own ear was not anything ordinary or explainable. Now, extraordinary scientific research on another implant. It's going to amaze you. A few weeks ago, I was contacted by Dr. Robert Kuntz, a physicist who had done some additional work on an implant that we've discussed before on this radio program with the scientist in whose body it was found, known to us as John Smith. Well, Dr. Kuntz is here to talk more about it today, along with Dr. Roger Lear, and John Smith is back. So we're going to be talking about this implant in a whole new way. Some major breakthroughs have finally been made in this area. I've always known since the day in May of 1989 that implant was put into my ear, the night rather, that these things were not ordinary and could not easily be explained, confirmed later by the work I did with Dr. William Mallow on implants and by the attempt to remove my own implant. So I'd like to welcome all three of you to the radio program, and especially Dr. Kuntz's website, drkuntz.com. Don't miss it. And Dr. Kuntz, welcome.
Okay, Whitley, thank you very much for the introduction. Well, about 10 months ago, you broadcast Dreamland interview with John Smith, and that got me interested in the subject, and I wrote an open letter about it, and I was somewhat concerned by the fact that it appeared to be the case that some possible extraterrestrials were placing implants in people. So anyhow, I looked into this man's background. He is a well-credentialed nanotube scientist. He has an excellent CV. He has a patent in the nanotube area, and he has several patents pending. I've also spoken with him for 2 hours, two separate times on the phone. He is has an excellent knowledge of physics. In fact, I was very surprised that he understood the physics, the specialized physics I'm working in. He is a remarkably intelligent man and very, very gifted. So he's also very.
I have to agree that he's a remarkably intelligent man, John Smith. Ears are burning, but that's okay. He knows it too.
Well, he's also level-headed and sensible. I mean, this is not a man given to flights of fancy. So what he tells you, I believe you can take to the bank. Okay, now, as far as the analysis of the implant goes, this is a beautiful paper that was written by the author. And they
because of the – folks, just – I'm sorry to stop you, Dr. Kuntz. Because of the nature of the situation, people's jobs can be – placed in jeopardy if they are found to be working on this subject. That is the sad state of science. Now, it's very tragic, but this work has been done at a very high level of finish in terms of the science that's gone into it. I think you would agree there, Robert, and in fact, both Dr. Lear and John Smith would agree too, I think.
I agree with that. Let me continue about this analysis of the implant. This is an excellent paper. These men are doing excellent scientific work. They subjected the implant that was removed from the person to a battery of tests that included light microscopy. They examined it with microscopes, ordinary light microscopes, at several powers. They examined it with a scanning electron microscope. They conducted EDS spectroscopy on it, mass spectroscopy, RF emissions spectroscopy, and they tested it for magnetic field properties. And so this was all done very well, very properly, a good scientific analysis and data. And so this is the real thing. This is Top Gun kind of science, and so by good people too. Now, I analyzed that the isotopic ratios I found in that implant, and I find that it's I get a figure of 90 million years if everything else being equal, and the isotope ratios in that sample were formed in a solar system in the same way as ours, then their solar system is approximately 90 million years ahead of ours in the evolutionary timescale. So that's, I believe,
Wait. Before you go on, that's a huge statement, because you're saying what are you saying here? Are you saying that this was formed in another solar system that's 90 million years older than ours? You know it was formed in another solar system?
Well, the very important is the non-terrestrial isotopic ratios of the material. The implant was placed in a mass spectroscopy. A piece of the implant was placed in a mass spectroscopy system, and then did a isotopic ratios decomposition of the sample. And so I looked at the beryllium-10 to beryllium-11 ratios, and there was a 2% shift in the ratios. Now, 2% shift, if you assume that the beryllium-10 to beryllium-11 ratio was, in their universe, was the same as ours at the starting point, or their galaxy, or their solar system, rather, in their solar system was the same as ours at the starting point. And if you assume that beryllium-10 decays into, boron-10 decays into beryllium-10, and then do some simple calculations, you come up with this 90 million years. It has to do with there's a 2% shift in the isotope ratios, and if the solar system is 4.6 billion years old, and you multiply 0.02 times 4.6 billion years, you come up with 90 million years. So that's the approximate. It looks like their solar system might have be advanced in the evolutionary time scale, shifted by 90 million years. That's one possibility.
Well, that would certainly explain, A, how they got here, and B, why they do seem to be somewhat more advanced than us technologically.
Yeah, I would say so.
Go ahead.
I just want to add, Whitley, that at the conclusion of our testing, which showed up on the television program, there was a consensus of opinion that the materials may have not been from this solar system. Now, this is the first time for me, too, that I've heard figures attached to this as age. But, shocking as it was to know that the material is not from our system, now to hear an explanation of a possible age, I think we could maybe go one step further with some perhaps astronomical calculations as to what the possibilities might be from the visible universe. So that might be something we'll look at next.
Well, also, it gives us finally a certainty that this is from a civilization of some sort, and that it's much, much older than ours, and obviously it's much different, but there was always an open question, because after all, the Spaniards, I should say, were greatly in advance of the Aztecs and the Incas in terms of technology, but it's arguable that they were at about the same, or in the case of the Incas, less advanced culturally. And the Incas and the Aztecs suffered for this. So the question becomes then a philosophical question. Can we count on these visitors being somehow more ethical? And I hope the answer is yes, but I just have to tell you, I still have grave doubts about that. This gets me, and we'll get back, Dr. Kuntz, in just a moment to the science of the thing. I want to introduce John Smith, because John Smith has had obviously a hand in the research on his object, because he's himself a skilled material scientist. But, John, you've also been out there alone in the dark with this, and how do you feel about that now? Are they still in your life?
They show up pretty regularly, on the average about every 2 weeks, near as I can figure. I don't remember, more than bits and pieces consciously without hypnosis, but, I find physical evidence, fluorescent stains on my walls, and, I woke up with a big bruise on my wrist on, January 4th, and there was a little red triangle on inside the bruise that had a needle mark inside it, so they gave me a shot of something, and I felt better than normal for a couple of days after that.
You felt, excuse me?
I felt better than normal for a
better
couple
than
of
normal.
Days after that.
Well, that's a
this was after the implant was removed?
After the implant was removed, I felt better. I felt very kind of strange when that that toe implant was in me, but I felt like a governor had been removed from my thoughts or something along those lines after it was removed. But in this latest incident on January 4th, where they gave me an injection of something, I actually felt better than normal for a couple of days after that.
We'll be back in just a moment with John Smith, Dr. Roger Lear, and Dr. Robert Kuntz.
This is Whitley Strieber. We've gotten a lot of emails from people excited about the fact that there is indeed going to be a Dreamland Festival number 3. And we've also gotten some nice offers of testimonial from people who have been to previous Dreamland Festivals. This is one of those people telling about just what it's like at a Dreamland Festival.
What I loved about it was that the people there were incredibly intelligent and deep-thinking, caring people who wanted to hear these amazing stories.
What about access to the presenters?
That was great, to be able to hang out and have a few drinks with Jim Mars and talk about subjects that I don't think he's covered. I haven't read all of his books, but to be able to talk to him about some of the things that are of interest to me right now was just invaluable.
And that's one of the very special things about the Dreamland Festival. We all make ourselves available at the party, at lunch, at breakfast. We're around, and you can always meet with us at our hotel or stay at our hotel if you wish. In the late evening, around the bar, it is a very intimate experience, the Dreamland Festival. It's not like going to a UFO conference where the presenters spend most of their free time hiding from you. We're there. So come and join us at the Dreamland Festival this June 25th through 27th at the Scarrett Bennett Center in Nashville. Go to unknowncountry.com, click on the store tab, click on the latest, and get your tickets today.
You're listening to Whitley Strieber's Dreamland. This is the Edge of the World.
We're back with John Smith, Dr. Roger Lear, and Dr. Robert Kuntz talking about an object that was removed by Dr. Roger Lear from the body of John Smith. John Smith is also an advanced materials scientist with a patent to his own credit and a highly credible reputation in his field, which is why we are keeping him anonymous. Dr. Robert Kuntz is an established physicist who has taken an interest in this subject. And, of course, Dr. Roger Lear needs no introduction on Dreamland. Dr. Kuntz, before we left the air, you asked if John Smith had continued to have experiences after the object was removed, and he, of course, said that he had. Now, mm-hmm. in terms of, I would like to ask you if you thought perhaps the removal of the object would end the experiences, or exactly why did you ask him that question?
Well, I'm just curious about this man as a person, because I've come to know him. He's a very nice fellow, and you know, he's a fellow scientist, he's a fellow American, and you know, what are these characters up to that are putting implants in people? Now, you know, this is and also let me mention, it looks like this device is a phonon, negative energy phonon scalar device that is listens to conversations and retransmits on scalar frequencies, according to my analysis.
Now,
so
when you
I would
say scalar frequencies, exactly what do you mean? Enlighten those of us who have essentially no idea what that would be.
Well, okay, that's the longitudinal wave of the electromagnetic field that most Western scientists don't know anything about. Nikola Tesla was experimenting with it. He knew about it. But physicists in America use the transverse gauge of the electromagnetic field, typically, and that doesn't include longitudinal currents. And these are the scalar currents. The longitudinal waves are hard to detect by ordinary means. We use transverse electromagnetic detection because most physicists only believe there is a transverse component to the electromagnetic field, but actually there's a longitudinal component. That's the scalar component associated with scalar physics, free energy and what Nikola Tesla did and things along those lines. And so this device is apparently a listening device, according to my analysis, tuned to certain phonon frequencies. You can pick up sound waves at long, long distances if you listen to the scalar component. And so that little piece of iron with a coating on it, based and charged with negative scalar energy, intercepts sound waves and then retransmits on scalar frequencies. Was also allows you to triangulate on the position of the person. So I would say my analysis indicates it's a listening device, that long-range listening device. They could hear both sides of a telephone conversation, and maybe 15 feet around the person, and transmits. I don't know how far, but probably to something in orbit. I would say around the Earth. That would be my guess.
And all of that,
Bob.
Just,
maybe you could just mention to the listening audience the speed at which a scalar wave travels through the universe in comparison to light and radio waves.
They can travel faster than light.
Yeah, some people say it's a pi over 3 factor. So that would be pi over 2. 3 halves, 1.5. That's what some people say. Now, it could be faster. I don't know. I'm still working on that. Turns out I'm working on the unified field theory after Einstein, who had the right idea. And I'm about the only one in the world that does that. But Einstein had it right. And the longitudinal component of this, to the electron, the photon, we don't understand the photon. People talk about the photon as if we're nothing, but we don't understand it. And the longitudinal component of the electromagnetic field is the scalar component, and we're lost. No, the Russians aren't. The Russians are pretty advanced in it.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's been a lot of research into this field in Russia.
Yeah, in Russia. But in the United States, the scientists here are terrible. They won't listen to you.
Well, that's,
they won't listen.
But that, you know, American science is falling behind. John Smith, what have you got to say? We hear you trying to break in here.
Well, I was not surprised at all when Dr. Kuntz concluded that longitudinal waves had a lot to do with the function of the device. I knew they ran on zero point energy, and you can extract zero point energy through longitudinal phonon interactions in metals. And I think these devices broadcast a lot of power at scalar frequencies, maybe hundreds of watts. And I agree that it would enable somebody, at least in orbit, to pick up information about you, and perhaps a lot further away than that. I have reason to believe that they have a station on the moon that coordinates all this information. Hmm. I remember them telling me that, at least. I think it's a brilliant analysis too where you analyze the isotopic ratios and came up with the conclusion that their solar system was much older. Perhaps that means that their solar system is closer to the center of the galaxy because there are some older stars in that direction.
Yes, that's right.
Could be. Let me also say something about a self-assembly. These devices, when you break them apart, they want to come back together. Well, they're also magnetized. Now, if you take an ordinary magnet and break an ordinary magnet apart, it will do anything but self-assemble. It doesn't want to self-assemble. But if it's charged with, if it's a negative energy scalar system, a negative energy magnet, according to my research, will want to come back together into form its original shape. So that, I would say...
You can magnetize things that... that ordinarily do not magnetize, like an avocado tree or stainless steel or wood or things like that, with a type of negative magnetic energy or whatever type of magnetic energy they use.
Yeah, Whitley, I'll tell you something. Most modern physicists would tell you it's impossible to magnetize an avocado tree or a piece of plastic or anything
right.
like that.
Yeah.
That's because we don't have the right laws of physics.
Well, we're missing something. You know, I noticed the only person I worked with was Dr. Bill Mallow at Southwest Research Institute, who Roger also worked with. And Dr. Mallow saw with his own eyes some of these strange magnetic fields, and I certainly experienced them on the night the implant was placed in my ear in my house in upstate New York. The next day, the alarm system had been opened without tripping, and he found an enormous magnetic field, very powerful, around one of the switches. Then there was no source for it. In addition, when the Italian government was investigating a series of peculiar spontaneous combustion events in Sicily, and the locking of car doors and the turning on of automobiles from a distance that were uninhabited, that had frightened a whole community, they found in a field during this course of this investigation, on which they spent over $2-3 million and years of work, they found a free-floating magnetic field that had no source. Now, in our understanding of physics, you can't have that. There can't be a magnetic field that is just simply sitting there in the middle of the atmosphere without any magnetic or electromagnetic source. And we're going to take another little break right here. We'll be back with John Smith, Dr. Roger Lear, and Dr. Robert Kuntz in just a moment.
You're listening to Whitley Strieber's Dreamland Online. You're listening to Whitley Strieber's Dreamland. This is the Edge of the World.
We're back with John Smith, Dr. Roger Lear, and Dr. Robert Kuntz discussing an object that was extensively studied that came out of John Smith, who is also an advanced materials scientist himself. This object is connected with his life of close encounter experiences, not unusual in the sciences, as you would think. I know a number of other scientists now who have come forward to me in strictest anonymity. One of them has been on this radio program talking about their own close encounter experiences. The close encounter experiences well penetrated into the scientific community, despite the fact that the scientific community pretends that it doesn't exist. It certainly, most assuredly, does. And so now let's continue on. And John, you spoke a little bit about what was happening to you, and now we've been talking about really about the technology of this object as we can theorize about it at the absolutely beyond the leading edge of our understanding. It's almost all theoretical discussion so far about the scalar waves and the...
At least hundreds of years beyond where we're at right now.
Yeah, John, we can't hear you at all. If you could speak a little more loudly, it would be helpful.
Well, John? This stuff is hundreds of years beyond where we're at technologically, I would say.
Yeah, even more than hundreds of years, possibly.
Maybe thousands, yeah. It's really hard to say stuff like that, but it's definitely beyond our...
I want to ask each of you a question in turn, and you can take your time answering it. We've got plenty of time. I'm going to start with you, Dr. Lear. Dr. Lear, you've been working on this for years, and I won't even go into the problems that the scientific culture and the general community have in dealing with it. But what I want to ask you is, on balance, do you think that this is leading in a good direction for mankind or not? And I'm going to ask each of you the same question. Roger, what do you say to that?
Well, Whitley, that's a philosophical answer, obviously. And it should be highly dependent upon the individual and the way they look at the subject. But strictly from a scientific viewpoint, looking at the positive and negative side, and nothing that I've seen in relation to the implant subject indicates that anything bad is going to happen to mankind. It would certainly indicate that there's an interest by some intelligence. Some entities are interested in the aspects of human physiology and genetics to the extent where there, I believe there's a massive covert operation going on, perhaps even to change the context of what human nature is, since we really haven't done so good with what we've had. And I did a study on 17 functional growth characteristics in children, as you know, and we found that they've been accelerated by 16 to over 80% in a period of 40 years, which indicates that something is going on. If you look at all the possibilities, you come to the conclusion that there's only two logical possibilities that can explain this. One is if you're a devout theist, then it's an act of God, be satisfied with that and so on. And if you're not satisfied with that, then the only other possibility is direct genetic manipulation. So perhaps these devices are merely remote sensing devices to see or to tell someone what their successes and failures have been. So I really don't, as I said, from the implant standpoint only, I don't see anything bad. However, this is a worldwide phenomena, most and probably involving numerous entities, intelligences from somewhere else and perhaps some from even here, other dimensionalities or times, and so on. And, you know, they, what one does, the other may not do or disagree with. So very complex question, Whitley.
John Smith, you said that you felt constrained prior to the object being removed from you. Would you say that you felt, exactly what did you mean? Did you mean you felt a sense of being controlled or something else?
It's very hard to explain. I did feel a sense of being controlled, and I felt like there was some sort of a governor, say, placed in my thoughts. It's really hard to explain, but I just felt freer when the implant was taken out. And I guess not all implants have that effect, but I certainly have reason to believe I have other implants. But they were, the whole thing was very complicated. They were very hesitant to put this toe implant in to begin with. They waited a long time for orders, I remember, before going ahead with the procedure. And I don't know if it was because they thought it might do more harm than good or because they knew I'd start an investigation, because there had been a lot of activity prior to that, and that was just the final thing to get me to start an investigation of what was going on. So it was one of those two reasons why they were hesitant to put the toe implant in, but I think that they meant for it to be removed and studied. I think that was part of their plan in retrospect.
Now, I know that your work is, well, you've never told me whether or not it's classified, and I don't intend to ask, since it's against the law to ask that question, of somebody you believe may have to answer in the affirmative. I do know that you have said that your work is, a lot of your work is very confidential, and that it has to do in general areas that would be of interest to somebody who was doing this. But the interesting thing is this to me. The object contains carbon nanotubes, and it contains design information that could have helped you in your work. And I'm wondering if the engineering of the object gave you any useful ideas.
Yes, it did, actually. The carbon nanotube bundles in the device appear to be insulated with calcium sulfate and calcium phosphate, and that insulation would be compatible with biological systems. So the wiring of the device seems to be carbon nanotubes insulated with these materials, and I think that that would be extremely useful in a biocompatible carbon nanotube electronic device, and that definitely could come in handy in the future of my career.
Yeah, because conceivably you start thinking in terms of very small, very useful implantable devices that would not be rejected by the body. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Yeah, these devices are extremely well engineered to be compatible with the body, and Dr. Lear is an expert on that aspect of it.
Yes, we saw some in when we were doing work on them in Texas that were just remarkable in that respect. They were quite wonderful in that they were beautifully encapsulated in skin from the host's own body that had been taken from elsewhere in the body, and it was quite a marvelous technology. Dr. Kuntz, I would like now if we're just going to take a little break, and when we get back, we're going to talk to Dr. Kuntz about just what he thinks is going on and what its possible significance is, when we get back, I'm going to tell you a rather scary story that I will begin that with, because I think this is a matter to be taken much more seriously than mankind takes it. We'll be right back.
This is Whitley Strieber's Dreamland. We go deeper.
On Dreamland today, we have Dr. Robert Kuntz, his website, drkuntz.com, a physicist who has taken an interest in a very, very technologically advanced and carefully studied implant that is in the body of another scientist we call John Smith. Also, Dr. Roger Lear is with us, the alienandscalpel.com. And we have been discussing the significance of this object, both technologically and in terms of what it may be doing. This week, we received a report at unknowncountry.com, which is being worked on as a news story and probably will be up by the time this program is aired, in 10 days. Today is the 8th of April. In any case, what I'm talking about is a series of sheep mutilations that have taken place in England and an area where there is extensive UFO activity. And the things that are being done to these animals, farmers are actually seeing lasers coming down out of the sky and striking their animals. It's not something that's happening very secretively at all. And they are finding their animals, like, with holes in their heads and their brains removed, et cetera, and so forth. And it's shocking, and it's frightening, because it looks like a very advanced technology being used, doing things that are in more or less absolute indifference to the feelings and the property, for example, of the people who are seeing this happen to their animals. And now, Dr. Kuntz, how do you feel, if I may ask, about what is going on overall? Are we in a situation where we're going to end up kind of like those farmers, or worse off? Or will there be, as this emerges, do you think, a more positive spin to it?
Well, I think there are positive and negative sides to visitations by extraterrestrials. It all depends on which group. I think there's more than one that's coming here. Now, with respect to John Smith and his implant and these other people who are being implanted and being taken out of their homes in the middle of the night by advanced technology, this is not something I care for at all. I find it very disturbing, and as a former member of U.S. military intelligence, I would find it to be a national security issue that must be addressed, and I believe is being addressed secretly, but very poorly. People should be informed of this. This is who knows what these characters are up to. Now, some of these extraterrestrials probably are very good, but these characters who are implanting people in the middle of the night, and that's not something I would judge as being a good quality that we would want. So I would say, and also the laws of physics in these other sectors of the universe, according to my analysis and these isotope shifts, they're becoming more and more neutron rich. They're slowing down. The materials aren't the same. So a steak sandwich from the Earth could be a lot different than a steak sandwich from planet Zutari or something, you know. And so they come here for maybe many reasons. They want to have a fresh harvest of material that's more robust, a younger laws of physics, if you would, or younger isotopes. And so I don't like it at all. I was very concerned about this. Now, I don't stay up at night worried about it, but it, to me, is a national security issue. I'm certain that the national security community is taking some elements, some people, but it's held in such secrecy, and everything's covered up, and I'm concerned about it, Willie. That's the bottom line.
Now, we have also been getting reports consistently over the past just few weeks of people observing conflict between UFOs, of rays of light flashing between UFOs, and in some cases, some of them exploding. John Smith, how do you react to information like that?
Well, I think there are conflicts going on between different groups of aliens that are coming here. The aliens actually sent me a message through another abductee that I think was genuine. And they said that the Earth is very important to a lot of species, and it sounds like it's important enough for it to be fought over, so I'm not too surprised. And as far as what the aliens I'm interacting with are doing, I think that they're trying to put us on a different path of development, a path more to their liking, and they don't ask permission for a lot of the stuff that they do, and that's not good, like Dr. Kuhn said, but whether it's totally negative or not is another story. I mean, we don't always know what's good for us, so it's difficult to say whether what they're doing is good or bad, but it is disturbing.
I don't like it, Whitley. As a former National Security Agency instructor, I don't like it one little bit.
Okay, well, that seems clear. Roger, you've been quiet. Let's hear what you have to say about it.
Well, I've been.
I mean, given this battle
I've
in the sky, that's what I'm specifically talking about now. I know you've already answered the other part of the question. But if there is some sort of battle going on, does that resonate at all with any of the information you have about this?
I was going to say basically that I try and divorce myself from the more complex issue of whether there are battles going on. And I'll tell you why. I have enough craziness in my life to look at. We don't know what our government or what a shadow government or what the secret government is doing, what deals have been made, who's enemy of who. Certainly could be, you know, battles going on in the sky. Ed Grimsley with his night vision goggles has seen all kinds of things. But, you know, it's not very clearly defined as to what actually is being seen. We have another nuclear physicist that's with ANS Research that looked through his optical equipment and was not really impressed what he said was going on. There are some things flying up there, that's for sure. But he looked at it, and he looks at things in a very scientific way, too. And he said, you know, you have to understand the motions and movement of the atmosphere and the disturbances and what may seem to be here 1 minute and there next may not be you can't really say that that's a particular object that's doing that because of the light refraction index and numerous other things. So I kind of go along with that. But it wouldn't surprise me any. That this, you know, is going on, and there are disagreements, and you know, we have to go back to the Apollo project and why we're not going back to the moon. And every time a president makes a statement about going there, something seems to happen. We run out of money, and et cetera, et cetera. And you know, some have said we were told to get off the moon and not come back. Others have said that you know we've been on the moon since Project Horizon. Which Colonel Corso described in his book, The Day After Roswell. So that was in the late 50s. So we could already have a moon base there. others have said the secret to black budget technology, which is in the $93 trillion mark, is at least 50 years ahead of our known science here. So it's just a massive amount of complexities.
Yes.
If I were to consider all these things on a daily basis, really, Whitley, I couldn't take any time to look at the smaller things, which is the implant stuff.
Well, you know, a very interesting sequence of events took place with regard to the moon recently. I was watching it with great interest. First, for years, NASA has said there was no water on the moon. This has been the Bible at NASA. And interestingly enough, there were never released any detailed analysis, spectrographic analysis of the moon rocks that they brought back. Now, the Indian government, or the Indian scientists, recently proved that the moon is extensively supplied with water. There's water in the stones. The moon is practically moist. I'm joking, of course. It's not moist. It's a little too cold to be moist. But there's certainly enough water on the moon to maintain a human colony. Not 2 weeks passed after that, and Obama announced, we're definitely not going back to the moon. Just when, for the first time in history, it became clear that we could create a colony that lasted and lived on the moon. Now, there is on the moon a substantial amount of one of the most valuable fuels of all, helium-3, which is a very non-polluting, very useful fuel. There is enough helium-3 on the moon, in fact, to solve the energy problems on the Earth. And there's enough water for us to put a sufficient amount of industrial infrastructure on the moon to mine it and bring it back. On Earth, there's very little helium-3. Now, why? Just as we find that it's possible to go get it, we announce we're not going to do that. I felt a cold chill go down my spine when Obama made the exact opposite of the announcement that I would have expected him to make. Dr. Kuntz, clearly you would feel that we're somehow being constrained. Dr. Lear, I get the impression you would agree with him. John Smith, do you feel a sense at all that we've been locked out of the moon?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know they have a massive base on the far side. NASA even has pictures of it from the lunar orbiter and the Apollo missions. And the aliens have a massive mining operation going on the moon. And as you say, there's water. There's not, of course, nearly as much as on Earth, but there's plenty of water for colonization. And NASA's known about that for years and was keeping it top secret. I remember an incident back in 1972 when an Apollo lunar scientist got in trouble for announcing that there was a cloud of water vapor 100 miles wide on the moon that had been detected by the instruments that the astronauts left. Hmm. And they said it was just off-gassing from one of the lunar landers, but that's not possible because two instruments 100 miles apart were detecting this cloud at the same time. And people have seen mysterious gaseous clouds on the moon for years, both from the ground and from spacecraft. So it's no secret that it's an open secret that there's water on the moon, and we are being kept from doing any operations there. Unless it's on some scale in cooperation with the aliens, we're not going to be allowed to put massive colonies there and do whatever we want. I think that's quite unlikely.
Well, I all I can say about this is this. You've just heard him say some very peculiar things about the moon. However, they're peculiar. But I've heard similar things from some of the astronauts who were on the moon and have been asked to keep it absolutely under my hat, who they were. But suffice to say, all is not as it seems in this solar system. No question about that. And the human position in the solar system is a difficult one, and I personally will come down where I feel. I feel that we are being, to a degree, helped, to a degree, challenged, and to a degree, manipulated by a very advanced, complex group of different forces or elements, some of them perhaps in the physical universe and some of them perhaps not, or all, both. And as Roger says, it's all terribly complex. But I want to end this show, and we're just about to finish, with a statement that was made to Philip Corso that I consider the most important statement ever made by the visitors to anybody. Colonel Corso had been sent on an expedition to come face to face with one of the Greys, which he did do. And he asked and asked on behalf of the United States government what was on offer for us. The answer was a new world if you can take it. In every way, what we have heard today confirms my thought that is going to be very hard. John Smith, Dr. Roger Lear, Dr. Robert Kuntz, I would like to thank all three of you for being on Dreamland today. Dr. Roger Lear's website, alienonthescalpel.com, Dr. Kuntz's website, drkuntz.com. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Our pleasure, Willie.
Yeah, great to be here.
Well, thank you, and we'll hope to revisit in the future as this extraordinary journey that you are all on continues.
This has been Whitley Strieber's Dreamland. We'll be back next week with another journey to the extreme edge. Don't miss a single week, and tell your friends about our unique program. Our Dreamland crew is Evan Ross on sound, Dana Augustine on program art, Daniel Stegall, webmaster, and I'm your Dreamland announcer, Brian Arnold. Thank you very much for listening.